So this is in the second canto of Bhagavatam. There's some discussion in chapter 2 in Prabhupada's purport. Text 35, 13 different points about how to see the soul, seeing the soul and the super soul by deduction, reason and perception. Very interesting. So we summarize these points. It's philosophy, but it's very important to help us understand the difference between the body, the soul. Who's actually the seer? Is the body the seer, or is the soul the seer? Is the eyeball seeing, or is the atma seeing? So Prabhupada is saying in his purport that Krishna, Sri Krishna, is in every living being along with the individual soul. And we can actually perceive this fact by using reason and perception. And we can discover the presence of the super soul in everyone's heart. So this is a summary of Prabhupada's purport. One can perceive oneself as existing. With a little intelligence, one can understand that he is different from his body, or one is different from the body. He is the seer, and that his existence is separate from everything else which is seen. Right? The observer. I'm the observer, and I'm observing all these phenomena. But the observer is different than the phenomenon. I'm seeing my body, I'm observing my body, but I'm not what I'm observing. I'm separate from what I'm observing. The seer is separate from that which is seen. So who is the seer? What is the seer? The seer does not see or move independently. Both sight and movement are dependent on the various forms of energy combined in nature. For example, one's ability to see depends on both one's senses, the eyes, and the presence of light, which is an energy of nature, light energy. Similarly, one's five perceptual senses, five working senses, three subtle senses, mind, intelligence, and ego, they provide only the mechanics that make both perception and movement possible. They do not in themselves provide the experiences one perceives. Three. Those experiences, in other words, the things one sees, are nothing but the products of the inexhaustible permutations and combinations of the forms taken by natural energy. That's Prabhupada's quote. In other words, one's ability to see is subject to the conditions imposed on him by nature. So if there's no light, we can't see. So it's so much conditional. 4. That which is seen, matter, is unconscious. That which sees, spirit, is always conscious. Matter is ever-changing. Spirit is immutable. In other words, we're always seeing. I saw my body when I was 1. I saw my body when I was 10. I saw my body when I was 20, 30, 40. The seer is the same, but the body's changing. The matter, the material energy, the material body, it's mutable, it's changeable. But the seer is always there. I'm always seeing. I often even see that, especially if you stay in one place, like I'm staying in Delhi. And I'm even my body is basically the same. My weight is the same. I'm an adult. But I watch someone come to Delhi, a single man, a single girl. Then they come back a couple years later. Then they're getting married. Then they come back a couple years later. Then they have a child. Then they come back a couple years later and their kid's getting married. And all that happens in 20 years, a whole new generation. So I'm watching. There was this one teenager, then that teenager got married, and the teenager had a child, and the teenager's child had a child. So I'm the same seer, but so many changes I've seen. The body, that body of what I'm observing has changed so much, grown up, married, grandchildren. So this is some basic points that Prabhupada's saying to help us understand about the seer. Matter is ever-changing, spirit is unchangeable, immutable, doesn't change. 5. The seer experiences his material conditioning in the form of dissatisfaction with the limitations that matter imposes. So, the soul, or the seer, he feels dissatisfied with the material nature, the body. There's always so many difficulties and problems with the body. that we're stuck in and with the world which we're stuck in. Because this material world is always changing. The whole environment is changing, changing seasons. They say change is the only constant. Interesting phrase. Change is the only constant. And the body itself is changing around me. I'm watching my body change, and outside of my body I'm watching the seasons change, the environment change. Trees are cut down, cities are built, nature is destroyed, parking lots are created, teeth fall out, ears don't work. So this causes dissatisfaction of the soul, dissatisfaction. But there is an environment, but then that makes us inquire, is there an environment that doesn't change? Is there a body that doesn't change? An unchanging environment, an unchanging body, an unchanging external, an unchanging internal. So the soul now is surrounded by the material body, which is always changing. But then there's the spiritual body, which the soul has also. And when the soul is in, when the individual is in his own individual spiritual body, he'll see that his body never changes. Navayovanam. Eternally useful. Nityanavayovanam. And the environment that he will place, that we placed in by Kunta or Brajadam, will be unchanging. The trees will always be there. They'll never cut down the trees to make a parking lot, or make a flyover, or make a skyscraper. The peacocks will always be there. They won't become extinct. Extinct species of life. Save the whales. Save the peacocks of Vrindavan. They're going extinct. Parrots will always be there. Peacocks will always be there. Krishna will always be there. So it's a Nitya Dham, eternal Dham. Six, nothing material has ever developed the power of seeing or moving in any part of the world. Therefore, it is definite that matter and spirit are two different identities. One can thus conclude that the seer is spiritual and the seen is matter. Spirit and matter are distinct from one another. Point seven. Every living entity uses his intelligence. The living entity directs himself by the instructions of his intelligence, or he may reject those instructions. This implies that he's different from that intelligence. So intelligence is like a suggestion, a discrimination. It is good to do this. This would be good for you. But then we have free will. The living entity is more than the intelligence. Because sometimes people say, I am intelligence. I think, therefore I am. I am intelligence. But intelligence is just another power. Material. Faculty. So we may reject that. So we're different from the intelligence. His dependence on and accepting direction from his intelligence also indicates that his intelligence is superior to him. Intelligence gives one direction like some higher authority. And a living entity cannot see or move or eat or do anything without the use of his intelligence. So in terms of interfacing with this material world or material body, then the soul requires this intelligence. So intelligence is like a higher operating faculty. In some sense, we're dependent on it. Because without the intelligence, we can't utilize this machine. The seer can't utilize the machine of the body. Like you may be a computer programmer, and you have all the ability to work a computer and utilize it. But if its memory is corrupt, and although you know everything about computers and how to operate them, you can't use the machine because there's no way to express your will through the computer because the computer is not working properly. So the willing agent is the soul, the seer. But to express that will, the intelligence is required. That's when people get paralyzed. They become paralyzed or in coma. Nothing works. The soul is there, but he can't do anything with the body or with the environment. He's frozen. So there's a certain dependence. Intelligence gives direction like some higher authority, and a living being cannot see or move or eat or do anything without the use of intelligence. 8. One can also perceive that not only he, but every entity possesses and is directed by at least some intelligence. As there are vast gradations of intelligence among living entities, and as no one living entity possesses the totality of intelligence, one can understand that the sum of intelligence is greater than the intelligence possessed by any one living entity. As the sum of all intelligence apportions gradations of intelligence, which direct the unlimited and all-pervading entities as a higher authority, the presence of a most intelligent, highest authority can be assumed. In other words, that entity who apportions intelligence and is residing within and instructing every individual living entity is known as a super self or a super soul. So I have some intelligence within this body. But then there's this vast cosmic body, this vast cosmos with so many millions and billions of planets. Just like my body has so many little planets called cells, my body is like a little universe. Within my universe, this universe of my body, the boundary of my skin, the boundary of my limitations and boundary of my skin and bones, there's millions and millions of cells, billions actually. Billions of cells, and each cell is moving in its orbit and moving here and there. And doing its has its role to play in the organic whole. So the whole universe is just as many planets as there are cells in the body. And there's billions of universes. There are as many universes in this material world as there are mustard seeds in a 100-kilo bag of mustard seeds. Unlimited millions of universes. In every universe there's billions and billions of planets. And so I know I'm not keeping track of all those planets and organizing them and keeping them in motion and having them perform their functions. So there must be, if intelligence is working at this level, on my microcosmic level or small level of my body, to organize and integrate and run this body with its millions of cell-like planets, then whose intelligence is running all those planets of the whole universe? So that greater intelligence, that's the supreme intelligent being. The supreme intelligent being is God. So he's also within us, a super soul. 9. One then naturally wishes to know what causes the super soul to apportion different amounts of intelligence to the various living entities. All conditioned living entities identify with the body they possess. One's actions and desires are based on this identification. According to the body and desires one possesses, the superior principle of super self is guiding and supplying us according to our desire. Thus the super soul, the source of intelligence, awards either contracted or expanded intelligence depending on the body. In other words, insect has some intelligence, but it's not very expanded. He knows something about the limits of his body, but that's it. Even you see some insects, they hardly can figure out their body. Some insects are a cross between a bird and an insect, like a flying ant. Ant is an insect, but then he gets wings. Some of these ants get wings. So they walk along the ground, they say, oh, I have these wings, what are these wings? And then he flaps them and he flies in the air, and, whoa, what's happening? And then he crashes on the ground, looks all around. Wow, am I an ant or am I a bird or what am I? So he can't really figure out how to go. His intelligence is so contracted he can barely figure his own, the circumference of his own body is bewildering him. What to speak of, try to think about the universe and how it came about. But in a human form, the crown of creation, our intelligence is quite vast. Of course, that's in this planet, but there's even much higher beings with much greater intelligence, like Lord Brahma. He's also a living being with such great intelligence. Where they talk, sometimes Prabhupada talks about Yamaraj. Since Yamaraj is memory, you talk about our intelligence, our power of memory. Yamaraj is memory. They say that he's recorded in his memory banks all the sinful of all the human beings in the whole creation. He has all their, or at least on the earth planet, he has all their karmic, their good and bad deeds is kept in his memory. So nothing escapes Yamaraj. He's one of the great Mahajans. So what a vast intelligence he has. Just like in this planet, sometimes we meet some Brahman, he memorized the 18,000 shlokas of the Bhagavatam. And Brahmins like that, even today. 18,000 shlokas, Gita, this, that, the other thing. So that's vast intelligence. The body is awarded according to the previous desires and dictates how one will enjoy matter. The grosser the desires, the more contracted the intelligence, the supersoul awards. With gross desires, you don't need an intelligence, you just need some senses and a body. You only want body pleasure, you don't need much intelligence. Just eat, sleep, mate, and defend. Haranita, Maitun, Bayam, Vas. So you get enough intelligence to do that. This requires 10 grams of intelligence to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. So then you get that much intelligence. So human beings, they have like 100 grams of intelligence, but they're using 100 grams of intelligence just for eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So that can be done in a bird's body. A bird has 10 grams of brain. So then nature will think, why I gave you so much big, you know, I gave you such a big computer. You know, I gave you such a big computer, 400 gigabytes memory, 10,000 megahertz speed, and all you're doing is playing crossword puzzles. You're just playing some kids' games. And you're wasting all that memory power, and you have that, all that speed. You could be doing so much design, artwork, all this memory. You can do so much artwork and load paintings. And all you're doing is word processing. Word processing with a 400 gigabyte hard drive and 10,000 megahertz speed. Just to type a letter on email to your friend and your pen pal. So then somebody will come along and say, you don't need this computer, it's way too big for you. Look, take this thing, 1 gigabyte memory and 1,000 gigabyte speed. It's fine. You know? So this is the point that Krishna gives us his vast intelligence to understand him. Number 10, all living entities face a choice. Should one orient himself toward ignorance, the bodily concept of existence, or toward knowledge, the spiritual concept of existence? 11. If one chooses the spiritual conception, he can move toward that understanding by surrendering to the Supersoul. Then, rather than one's desires being dictated and limited by the body he inhabits, his desires will be centered on the Lord's desire. The Lord will then award him appropriate corresponding intelligence. 12. Prabhupada says, so far as common sense is concerned, we come to the conclusion that there are three identities, matter, spirit, and super spirit. If we go to Gita, or Vedic intelligence, we can further understand that all three identities, matter, individual spirit, and super spirit, are all dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, this material world, the Jivatma and the Paramatma, are all dependent upon Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One may wonder why the super soul is dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why? It's because the Supersoul, Paramatma, is only an amsha of the Lord, a partial representation. We learn this from Shastra. By the perception that the Supreme Entity must possess more characteristics than that of supplying intelligence to the soul, it's also common sense. Because the Paramatma is just supplying intelligence. So that's his function, to give some intelligence. 13. Realization of Paramatma, or Superself, as Prabhupada says, by the individual self is the beginning of self-realization. And by the progress of such self-realization, one is able to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead by intelligence. So first we realize Paramatma, that God is in my heart. He's guiding me, helping me, giving me intelligence, knowledge, discrimination. And then we can realize that by studying Shastra that he's only a partial representative of the Supreme Aspect of Godhead, Sri Krishna. By the help of authorized scriptures, and by the grace of the Lord, we can realize Krishna. The Lord can award one a vast amount of intelligence and spiritual realization, or he can give none at all. If one wishes to attain the greatest amount of both, intelligence and spiritualization, he should hope to inspire the Lord to become inclined to award him the greatest amount of grace. In other words, Krishna will give the realization, and Krishna will give the intelligence. But who does he give that realization intelligence to? Any Tom, Dick, and Harry? Yes, he gives it to someone. Usually we give gifts to our friends or our dear ones. We don't just give gifts indiscriminately. At least firstly we give to our dear ones and near ones, and then we have excess, and we fully satisfied our nearest beloveds. Then we may distribute on a broader basis to anyone outside of our family circle. But Krishna says, those that are dear to me, that I'm very kind to them, the priyatams. Priyosime. Krishna tells Arjuna and Bhagavad Gita, because you're my friend, priya sakha, and because you're my friend, you're dear to me, I will give you this knowledge. So this is the point. When we become dear to the Lord by our behavior, by our surrender, by our submission, by our attachment, by our love. You become dear to someone by love. If you love someone, then you serve them and submit to them and try to please them, then you attract their heart and capture their, win their affection and capture their attention. So Krishna is a supreme person, so he has these personal attributes. He even says it, he lets it open. It's an open secret that Krishna can be controlled by love. It's like some world heavyweight boxing champion telling the opponent his weak point. You have to watch out. You want to know my weak point after I'm fighting for a half hour? I let my right hand come down a little bit. And I'm not guarding. I let my left hand come down a little bit, and I'm not guarding my chin. So if you wait about 10 minutes into the fight, then you can knock me on the chin. So then they reveal the weak point, and then you wait for 10 minutes. Oh, look, his hand is dropping down. It always happens. Now, don't. He doesn't realize he's not guarding his chin, and I give him a right uppercut to the chin, and then send him flying, and defeat him. So this is. Krishna is telling, this is my weak point, love. Bhakti mama vijananti yavanyashasmi tattvatam. Krishna says in Gita, in the 18th chapter and 55th verse, he says, this is my, you want to know my weak point? Like lovers, they never like to tell the weak point. The husband always tries to keep so many secrets from the wife because he's afraid that she may take advantage of his weak point. So they lose control. This is the very end of Bhagavad Gita, 18th chapter, 55th verse. Krishna is telling, listen everyone, do you want to know my weak point? Bhakti mama vijanati yavanyash chasmi tatvataham. Tato mam tatvato gyatva vishate taranantaram. One can understand me as I am, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, only by devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of me by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. Bhakti mama vijananti, avijan janati. One can fully understand me by love. So, and also other places he says, aham bhakta pradino. Aham bhakta pradino. Krishna becomes vasibhut. He becomes controlled by his devotees. Devotee means his lovers. Lovers control him. So Krishna is easily controlled by love. But the difficult thing is to get that love, to attain that state of dedication, where one actually falls in love with Krishna. Is that it's not so easy. Because now we love everything but Krishna. We love our bodies, we love ourselves. This is in the story 9th canto of Bhagavatam, that verse is there, aham bhakta parad, you know. Yasvatantra ivadvija sadubir grasta ridayo bhakter bhakta janapriya. Janapriya. Bhakta janapriya. This Krishna, Bhagavan Vishnu is telling Durvasa Muni in the famous story Durvasa Ambarish. Aham bhakta paradina. Paradina. Paradina means I'm dependent on the will of my devotees. Asvatantra. Asvatantra ivadvija. He says, listen, Dvija, O Durvasa Muni, O Dvija, O Brahman. You say I'm Svatantra, Abhigya Swarat. Krishna is all-knowing, Abhigya and Swarat, independent. It's told in Bhagavat. But Krishna himself is saying, oh, really? Bhagavatam is telling, but I'm telling that Svatantra, hey, Brahman, I lose my independence, is lost in the presence of love, I lose my independence. In the presence of my bhakti prem, love of my devotees, and aham bhakti pradino. Yas vatantra sarubir grastaridyo. Because Grastaridya, the sadhus, the saintly people, the pure devotees that are completely free from all material desires, they have captivated my heart. Sadhubir Grastaridyo Bhakter Bhaktajanapriya. Because I am dependent not only on my devotee, but also on my devotee's devotee, Bhaktajanapriya. So this is Krishna saying that love controls me. I am controlled by love. Everyone's controlled by love. Love controls everything. It comes from Krishna. Because Krishna is controlled by love and we're part and parcel of Krishna, then we can also become controlled by love. In this text, Jiva Goswami, in this 2.2.35, he explains in Paramatma Sandarbha that the individual spirit soul is the first seer. Because there's a verse in this verse, he explains in 2.2.35, Drashta Lakshita. Means that the individual spirit soul is the first seer. So the mon may ask the question, what enables spirit soul to see? So what's the answer? The answer is given in the verse. Drishyer buddhyadibi, buddhi. He sees with the help of his intelligence. Without the presence of the seer, the act of seeing the visible world will not occur. If there's no person, there's, in other words, material world exists because I see it. If I'm not here to see it, it doesn't exist. Without the presence of the seer, the act of seeing the visible material world will not occur. Therefore, it is due to the seer who sees with the help of his intelligence and similar tools that seeing occurs. So one can understand that the super soul is present because the living entities are clearly not independent in their actions or encounters with pleasure and pain, and because they cannot act without external help. Thus one can understand both by logic and intelligence that the super soul must exist. By giving him eyes, the super soul enables the individual soul to see. By giving him ears, the super soul enables him to hear. By giving him a mind, the super soul enables him to think. And by giving him intelligence, the super soul enables him to understand. And Jiva Goswami quotes the Vallabha Shruti saying, Shritir Ashrita, which means by the super soul's will, all things are set in motion and are also made motionless. Jiva Goswami continues, by seeing that the super soul has entered all living beings, one can understand that these super souls are all expansions or parts of a great person. In this way, one can infer that the Supreme Personality of Godhead also exists. These are all little mini expansions of Krishna in the heart, the super soul. Clones, Krishna clones. In this way, one can... That the super soul is a partial expansion of the Supreme Lord has confirmed himself in these words in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10:42. So this is Bhagavad Gita reference that Krishna explains himself to Arjuna. 10:42, and he's explaining here that the super soul is a partial expansion of himself. He says, Ata va bahuna naitena kim gatena tavarjuna pishtabhayam idam krishnam ekam shena stito jagat. But what need is there, Arjun, for all this detailed knowledge that I've already given you? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. So there he's saying it, ekam shena, eka amsha stito jagat. Stita, I'm situated in this jagat, stita jagat, ekam shena, with a single fragment of myself. So this is, now what is that fragment? So the fragment is the amsha. Amsha means the Paramatma, super soul. Millions and millions and millions. It's kind of like yogis can expand themselves into eight forms, but then all the eight forms do the same thing. And Krishna expands himself into 8 billion zillion forms, unlimited forms. But what need is there, Arjuna, for all this detailed knowledge, with a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support the entire universe. So this is explain, gives some understanding about the seer and the seen. So by Krishna's omnipresence, he is always with us. If we're attached to Krishna's service, hearing and chanting, then we can feel the presence of Krishna in our lives. There's nothing in the world which is disconnected from the Lord. The only thing we have to learn is how to excavate the source of connection and thus be linked with Krishna by offenseless service. Sometimes we say, oh, I'm stuck here in college and so far from Radhakund, you know, away from the devotees, and I want to be in Radhakund. But that means that we're in Maya, because there's nothing in this world which is disconnected from Krishna. We have to learn how to excavate the source of connection. In other words, search for Krishna. Search for Krishna. He Radhe Rajadeva Kechi Lalite He Nanda Sunakuta Sri Govardhana Kalpa Parapatale Kalindi Vani Kuta Goshantavati Sarvata Rajapure Kada Mahavibala Vande Rupa Sanatana Ruyago Sri Jiva Gopalago. The Goswamis were wandering all over Vrindavan. They were searching for Krishna in Vrindavan. When Krishna never takes a step out of Vrindavan, Vrindavan apritaja paramekam nagachati. But they were saying, hey Radhe Vrajadevi ki, hey Vrajadevi, hey Radhe, are you on the bank of Yamuna? Are you in the caves of Govardhan? Where are you? I'm searching for you. Where? So if they're searching for Krishna in Vrindavan, then we can also search for Krishna in the college campus, or in Delhi, or in Bombay, or anywhere. This is devotee. Devotee is always searching for Krishna, trying to excavate the source of connection. And then we can be linked with him by offenseless service. We can be connected with Krishna by transcendental sound representation of Krishna, chanting Krishna's name. Oh Krishna, I'm so far from Vrindavan, where are you? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. Oh Krishna, you're here. Oh, you've come. Oh Krishna. The holy name of Krishna and Krishna himself are identical. When we chant the holy name in a fenceless manner, we can once realize that the Lord is present before us. Take the example of radio sound vibration. We can partially realize sound relativity. And by resounding the sound of transcendence, we can verily feel the presence of the Lord. In this age, when everything is polluted by the contamination of Kali, it is instructed in the scriptures and preached by Mahaprabhu that by chanting we can become free from contamination, rise to the transcendental platform and go back to Godhead. The offenseless chanter of the holy name is as auspicious as the Lord himself. And as a pure devotee moves all over the world, he can at once change the troublesome face of the world. Of course, that's what Prabhupada did. He changed the entire face of the world by revealing Krishna to everyone and giving us the ability to see Krishna in his holy name. Well, this is the ultimate seer, to see Krishna. The seer is the soul, and the soul, by birthright, can see God, can see Krishna. And that seeing will be accomplished. This is the seer. We are the seer, the eyes of the soul. The soul is also seeing. The seer is the Atma, not the body. So the Atma can see the original source of the Atma, can see his maker. It was Darshan, Bhagavan Darshan. And this is what all great devotees eventually do. They have Darshan with the Lord. And this is the purpose of seeing. The purpose of the eyes is to see the beautiful form of the Lord. And the purpose of the tongue is to speak the glories of the Lord and chant his sweet names. And the purpose of the ears is to hear the descriptions of the Lord and hear the beautiful Harikata of the Lord and his devotees and his Brajad Leela and Gaur-lila. The purpose of the body is to be engaged in the service of the Lord. And this way, by trying to see the Lord in everything and seeing everything in the Lord, we'll eventually see ourselves with the Lord in the spiritual world.